This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Nearly 100 people have so far been documented to have been killed in the devastating wildfires that swept the Hawaiian island of Maui, making it one of the deadliest such disasters in United States history. Federal agencies are pledging assistance even as survivors are desperately looking for loved ones or struggling to find lodging and other necessities. The historic town of Lahaina in particular has been completely destroyed, the fires consuming precious artifacts alongside lives. We turn now to Kaniala Ng, National Director of the Green New Deal Network and co-founder of Our Hawaii, a nonprofit grassroots organization, and a former elected official to the Hawaii House of Representatives. He's a seventh generation Indigenous Hawaiian living in Oahu. Welcome to the program, Kaniala.
Thanks for having me.
First, I want to just express my deepest condolences to you and all of those who have lost loved ones in Maui or who are desperately seeking news of their friends and neighbors. It's an unimaginable tragedy, and I know that you and others who hail from Hawaii are grieving right now. So that said, I'm wondering if you would characterize those people who have died so far in these fires as the victims of climate change.
I say that. The National Weather Service has said that low humidity, dry vegetation, and high winds has caused the fire. It downed a power line. So those are all functions of climate change. That's a matter of fact. I say this, and sometimes people say I'm politicizing it. I'm not politicizing it. The people who politicize it are the politicians who subsidize polluters, the oil and gas and coal industries that overheated our planet through their pollution, and now we're facing the consequences. So anyone who enables that pollution, anyone who denies climate change, from my eyes, they're the arsonists.
Now, there have been so many things that have happened all at once, a perfect storm, if you will. Climate change, of course, being chief among the things that have come together. Also, just pure awful luck in combination with the conditions created by climate change that caused this many lives lost, right? Would you say that government was also responsible for part of the disaster with things like communications during the disaster and also the impacts of industrialization with the loss of wetlands on Maui?
Yeah, I mean, it's a confluence of factors, luck being probably the smallest out of all of them. Colonial greed is definitely a root cause of these fires. Lahaina wasn't always a tinderbox. Historically, it was a lush wetland. It was home to some of the world's earliest and most innovative aquaculture systems, fish ponds called Loko'ia. But the original sugar barons in the early 20th century illegally diverted water to irrigate their stolen lands for monocrops. And now, in 2023, descendants of those sugar barons still amass massive profits from controlling our irrigation, land use, and political influence. So as we rebuild, it's crucial that we uphold the Green New Deal's vision of not just climate mitigation and adaptation, but also the public control of land and water, and making sure that as we rebuild, it's with a sense of equity and justice for everyone, and it doesn't get gentrified and used to further enrich disaster capitalists.
And I want to dig into all of those issues that you just mentioned. But first, how are residents just feeling right now? You had mentioned on social media, you posted that those people who have vacation plans to come to Maui as tourists need to just cancel their plans. And in general, tourism has been seen, especially in the last few days, as something that has contributed to the problem of what Maui and the rest of the Hawaiian Islands have faced, right?
Yeah, I mean, it should go without saying right now that people shouldn't be coming to play on Maui. It's alarming how there are people swimming and enjoying themselves in the same waters that so many of my friends, families, and neighbors have drowned in just a few days ago. Don't be one of those people. We need the hotel rooms for survivors, and we just need time to grieve and heal, and even for the medium and longer term, to rebuild. The fact that Front Street was built on, like, you know, an area that used to be fish ponds was in many ways artificial. It wasn't in harmony with nature. And this is the result, right? If people get in a fight with nature and try to resist its natural, I mean, not redundant, if it tries to resist its power, we will lose. So it's just a reminder of that these disasters are anything but natural. They could have been prevented. And we need to figure out from now, urgently, how to be more reciprocal with nature and build in a way that surrounds its best features and orient ourselves towards it rather than trying to hold dominion over the rest of the living world. And unfortunately, a lot of the people who perished in this fire were Kanaka Maoli, who held the key to that future, who are keepers of that indigenous knowledge of how to build a society that doesn't lead to ecological collapse and societal doom.
The people who had the means to flee fled. I mean, this seems to be sadly par for the course with other disasters that we've seen in the United States, where vulnerable communities of color, the elderly, the indigenous, the folks who don't have as many means as, say, wealthy whites who may have, you know, been living in their second or third homes on Maui, the vulnerable ones are the ones who are most likely to perish, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think people see Front Street and Lahaina Town as a tourist destination, but when you look at the people who actually lived there and who resisted gentrification and getting forced out, they were barely struggling to keep up with, like, the taxes and the higher costs associated with gentrification, but they held on tight. Some were living on the same lands, same properties from the 1800s, some even before that, so before Hawaii was a state or even a territory. And when I was an elected official and there was, like, a new regulation coming in from the federal government, like NOAA, around an endangered coral, I would talk to these people and they'd tell me, actually, that particular coral is invasive, so we would carry it and move it to the next bay over, and that would be illegal. So they had that kind of knowledge that was really place-based and specific and passed down for generations, that, you know, may be lost.
How are people coping right now? What are some of the efforts that people are engaged in right now in terms of just finding a place to live and figuring out how to survive?
I mean, if you're like me, you realize that all the movement building we do and advocacy and organizing within the constructs of, like, the nonprofit industrial complex isn't going to foment the full revolution. But when there are moments like these, moments of the whirlwind where power vacuums occur, it's necessary to have these institutions. So disaster capitalists are flowing in, land grabbers, land speculators are calling families that were just hit, that just lost their homes, lost loved ones, like vultures. They're just hovering above Lahaina like vultures. And while we're healing, while we're grieving, like, I still don't know where some of my friends are. My mom was living right there just 2 months ago and just moved to Wailuku. So, like, even the what ifs is keeping me up at night. But we realize, like, there's so much work to do. But at some point, I'm going to have to process these emotions to stay healthy and not repress them and fully grieve the komaha process, or aue, we call it in Olelo Hawaii. So I'm seeing community leaders step up, not just a source of direct relief and aid, but also of healing and emotionally, spiritually, and culturally. And then there's a deep hunger for not just resilience, which I think is not what we're looking for right now, but resistance to build back in a way that brings justice and restores the stewardship of land and water back to the people. So there's a deep hunger for that. So, you know, we're trying to set up funds that address not just immediate needs, but once all the institutions like the Red Cross and Salvation Army and FEMA are deployed, we're also building power for the longer run. Because once the cameras are gone, a just recovery will take years, maybe even decades.
So on that note, how can leadership of Indigenous Hawaiians be central and be centered in the recovery process? I mean, there's been a long movement for Native sovereignty in Hawaii, a long history of Indigenous-led leadership that's been calling for people to center the environment and center Indigenous practices in responsibly caring for the land. How is that knowledge, that leadership, that cultural awareness going to be centered in the recovery process in Maui from these wildfires? And do you think that Hawaii's political leaders will even allow that?
Well, the plantation history and trauma runs deep. Sometimes this whitewash is taught to us as kids as a simpler time where everybody got along. But the reality is quite different. We wore bongos around our neck. It means number in Japanese. It's made from the same slave tag manufacturers that the plantations in the South use. We were paid by dollars that could only be used back into the plantation. And we're purposely separated by race, so we couldn't communicate. That's why I learned my first language was Pidgin English, because they had to combine all their languages together to rise up and start the worker revolution in Hawaii against the sugar barons. Many of my ancestors were killed just to get basic worker rights. But in that process, you're taught that you're not good enough. White folks are smarter than you. You see it at your workplace, see it in the media. Honolulu, for example, has only elected one non-white male as mayor, even though we're a vast minority state. So that internalized racism, like after a while, you start to believe it. So part of like what we're working on now, like I cut my teeth in the Hawaiian sovereignty movement, is getting these folks to really like unleash their leadership, like tap into this emotion and trauma and guide it towards something positive and affirmative. I think Hawaiians are known to forcefully stand up against injustices, like we saw with Kaho'olawe and most recently Mauna Kea. But when it comes to like rebuilding a positive vision of the world we want to see, that role of the purveyor of, you know, what's beautiful is often given to white folks and their resources to do that work. But in reality, we're the ones that should be driving forward that positive vision. So we're bringing people together to actually start planning proactively what this community should look like, meeting people at their doors, doing wellness checks, helping, guiding them through insurance claims, FEMA applications, and just helping one another, but also building power. So making developers and the county respond to our needs rather than the other way around. So whether or not the government, to answer your question directly, rather or not they're willing to respond to the Kanaka Maoli community now, we're building power to make sure that they have no choice.
What are some of the things that people on the mainland can do in solidarity with the residents of Maui and of the state of Hawaii as a whole that doesn't feed into the ongoing colonization of the islands?
Just relate to Hawaii differently is what we ask. And, you know, it's not your fault. You've been growing up with the same propaganda as everybody else. Hawaii was packaged to you, subsidized. These multinational conglomerate hotels were subsidized by the state of Hawaii, the Hawaii Tourism Authority, to make you come here and to see our home as a playground. But the issue with relying solely on tourism is, in order for this system to work, the people that play here, the people that work and live here, necessarily have to be poorer than the people who play here. Otherwise, you know, we'd have different jobs, and like who would serve you? So it's that it's like a permanent underclass, like a servant's prison that we've created for ourselves. by conscripting us into a lifetime of servitude and tourism. So just seeing us as seeing Hawaii as a place that people actually live and respecting our voice is like the first thing. And second, there's a lot of aid going into direct relief, and organizers on the ground don't have the storage right now to field a lot of the goods, especially clothes. There's too much. And there's not a lot of focus on like the longer term rebuilding work. And once the cameras are gone and people aren't paying attention, it's going to be harder to get volunteers. It's going to be harder to fundraise. So there's the MauiRecoveryFund.org is positioning itself as a consortium of the most accountable and rooted groups to lead that work forward. Understanding that what you see after Hurricane Harvey, Maria, Katrina, you know, Puerto Rico, out in Paradise, California, it's like these temporary shelters can become permanent unless we're really intentional about building power and speaking up now. And we got to do that while navigating the grieving and healing. So it's a lot of work ahead, and that support goes a long way.
Can you repeat the name of that fund, Kaniela?
MauiRecoveryFund.org.
MauiRecoveryFund.org. So the best way for mainland Americans to help is to make financial donations to this fund rather than to collect in-kind donations, which of course is impractical anyway, if you consider the fact that it has to be shipped over a very long distance. And so you brought up some other recent climate change fueled disasters just now that have happened elsewhere in the US in recent years. And I'm wondering, what are the lessons, or what are some of the lessons in recovery that you've seen after these other disasters that might be informing your thinking in Maui?
Yeah, I mean, there needs to be an all hands on deck approach. I think when we look at climate advocacy, we tend to be siloed from the mutual aid organizations. But as the climate crisis progresses, we're going to have to do the loss and damage work, rebuilding communities, at the same time as organizing and mobilizing people for mitigation and adaptation. So rather than knocking on someone's door and telling them to call their elected officials and telling them why whatever degrees of warming and you know, some of these people, they're going to be like, okay, but what about like shoes for my kid? Can your organization provide that? And we need to draw bridges between like mutual aid efforts and advocacy efforts and do all of it at once, really, like sort of like the Black Panther model, or what like the National Tenant Welfare Rights Organizations would do from the 70s through the 90s. Getting back into that practice. And if we don't, there might be a rise of other forces. We're seeing eco-nationalism and eco-fascism rise on the right. We're seeing Proud Boys domestically lead some disaster cleanup efforts. So we got to make sure that people who believe in accountability and the role of government as a force for good and democracy as something that works, we need to be leading that effort. And so we're calling on President Biden to do more. He should declare a climate emergency in real life, IRL, not just practically, as he said last week, and commit to investing at least $1 trillion a year during his second term to accelerate the clean energy transition. So far, he's talked about finishing the job. He hasn't said how. And anything less than that would be an utter insult to the legacies of all the people who are lost in this fire. Like, Biden has a chance to become the savior of humanity, really. Like, probably the best legacy you can have as a president, or he can be forever known as someone who allowed in an era of mass suffering.
You mentioned Joe Biden's second term. That's if he wins a second term, right?
This is a call for every candidate running. I'm just saying Biden is the most likely to care. There's a whole party, half of the political establishment in America is totally against us, totally against climate justice, and that's the Republican Party. But that said, the Democratic Party still needs to do more.
Finally, Kaniela, what advice can you give to journalists who are covering the story of Maui's wildfires? Some of the coverage that has been emerging has been pretty insensitive, relegating Lahaina as nothing more than a tourist spot, or just in general looking at Maui through the lens of tourism and colonization. What advice can you give journalists who are covering this story, especially those of us living on the mainland?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the challenge with, capitalism and journalism. Like, there's an audience, and your audience most likely isn't in Hawaii. It only relates to Maui as a place to go to, as a playground. So you probably want to write in that context. I understand that. And I just ask that journalists also understand that when they do so, it can be very insulting to everyone who lives on Maui, and especially those in Lahaina and those who have lost loved ones in this fire, because we exist and we shouldn't be invisibilized and decentered in these stories. Like, there's one reporter who talked about a rich couple, conservative couple, like snowbirds, that were digging up a Rolex that was lost in the rummage, in the wreckage. And, you know, probably wasn't even digging. They had like a French manicure still done in the photo. And it's like, okay, that might be an appealing story to some of your more upper class readers. But like, what do you think that says to people who have loved ones missing in that same wreckage? Right. So just come from a place of empathy and humanity rather than chasing clicks.
Right. There are people who not only live in Maui year round, but whose ancestors have lived there for generations before there were any hotels even built, or before there was even really a tourism industry. I really appreciate everything that you do, Kaniela, and also just once more send you my deepest condolences for what has happened on Maui, sending you love and healing, and just wish you the best of luck.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
Thank you so much. My guest has been Kaniela Ng, the National Director of the Green New Deal Network and co-founder of Our Hawaii, a nonprofit grassroots organization. He's also a former elected official to the Hawaii House of Representatives and a seventh-generation Indigenous Hawaiian living in Oahu. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.